Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. Let's start by wishing all of you a Happy New Year. I hope you had a great New Year's weekend of celebrating and that 2016 has some good things in store for all of you listeners. The year opens with some good news for folks earning the minimum wage. You just got a raise, and we'll have the details. Next up, we'll tell you why San Diego supervisors may soon be taking over the management of Borrego Springs groundwater. Then learn about a proposed ballot measure that would tax the rich to pay for services for the poor in California. We'll also have a preview of the agenda for Lemon Grove City Council meeting this week, as well as information on some new requirements for police to report shootings and other violent incidents under a California law that just took effect in January. Then we'll tell you about a couple of wild rides involving a baseball coach and teenage player who fought back against a carjacker, plus how a Ramona grandmother later escaped from a second carjacking by the very same suspect. As we begin the new year today, we'll take a look back at the top stories in 2015 that impacted people in East County, including some where our reporting led to some positive results. We'll also tell you about some new laws for motorists you should know about, whether you're driving a car, a bike, or a hoverboard. If you're a Hacumba Hot Springs resident, listen up for details about a proposed release of a sexually violent predator in your community. A fire has claimed the life of a preschool teacher locally, and we'll have details on this heartbreaking holiday season tragedy. We'll also have the weather forecast for this week, and here's a hint, be sure to keep some galoshes and an umbrella handy, because it's going to get wet. And as a special treat, we'll be re-airing our interview with long rider Lisa Wood on her cross-country horseback riding expeditions. So stay tuned for these stories and more on today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters.
Tens of thousands of minimum wage workers in California will be making an extra dollar an hour on January 1st. The Golden State's minimum wage increases from $9 to $10 an hour, but labor advocates plan to continue their push for $15 an hour. Sean Worley with the Service Employees International Union's United Healthcare Workers West says $10 just doesn't cut it.
At $10 an hour, that's less than $21,000 a year for a full-time worker. That's barely enough to cover for yourself, much less if you have children, particularly in coastal areas, but even throughout rural areas, that's not enough to get by.
Two different branches of SEIU are promoting separate ballot measures next November. One would raise the hourly wage to $15 by 2020 and mandate 6 paid days off for illness. The other would raise the wage by the same amount by 2021. Critics of these measures say they'd raise costs for small businesses and lead them to cut hours or jobs. Worley counters that workers will have more money to spend, which benefits the economy overall, and he says a statewide measure would level the playing field between cities.
This is going to be uniformly applied, so no city can claim that one has an advantage over the other. And this is what is going to lift people into a better existence, one where they can provide for themselves and their families.
San Francisco and Los Angeles have already passed $15 minimum hourly wages that go into effect in 2018 and 2020, respectively. The national minimum wage is $7.25 an hour. For Public News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
On Wednesday, San Diego Supervisors' agenda includes a public hearing on whether to authorize the county to become a groundwater sustainability agency. That would give it jurisdiction over the Borrego Valley groundwater basin, the only source of water for the Borrego region. The Borrego Valley area is using 4 times more groundwater than is replenished annually on average. As a result, groundwater levels have declined over 100 feet in some parts of the Borrego Valley due to heavy water use for irrigated agriculture, residential, and commercial users, including golf courses and resorts that draw tourists to the region, as well as Anza Borrego Desert State Park. That's according to a U.S. Geological Survey study on the Borrego Valley groundwater basin that looked at the period from 1945 to 2010 in cooperation with the Borrego Water District. Supervisors will meet at 9 a.m. on Wednesday in the County Administration Building in downtown San Diego, and the Borrego groundwater issue is first on their agenda. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Should the rich be taxed to help the poor? Nonprofit groups that help the poor are working to qualify the Lifting Children and Families Out of Poverty Act for California's November 2016 ballot. The legislative analyst has estimated that the measure could raise up to $7 billion by adding a property tax surcharge on properties worth $3 million or more. According to the legislative analyst's analysis of the ballot measure, if approved by the voters, property owners would pay just a fraction of 1% more on the assessed values of their homes or businesses on a sliding scale for properties worth $3 million or more. Most rental housing is exempt, except for luxury units worth $2 million or more. The legislature could increase the surcharge on wealthy property owners up to a maximum of 1%, but only with approval of two-thirds of both houses. Revenues would go into a new Lifting Children and Families Out of Poverty Fund. The state would use that money to fund a variety of health, education, and social services programs, ranging from preschool to job training to home health care assistance. The Sacramento Bee reports that major money has begun to flow into the effort to qualify the measure for the ballot. On Christmas Eve, the Making Poverty History Campaign Committee reported a $700,000 donation from the Daughters of Charity Foundation, bringing to $900,000 the total contributed by the Christian organization dedicated to serving the poor. Hundreds of thousands of dollars have also poured in from other donors. Supporters have until March 21st to collect approximately 585,000 signatures needed to put the initiative on the November ballot. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Ed Barena.
Lemon Grove's City Council agenda this Tuesday includes a proposed ordinance that would ban medical marijuana dispensaries, deliveries, and commercial cultivation in the city. Council would also consider an ordinance to shift planning authority from the Planning Commission and instead have the City Council hear planning matters. Changes to the Water Efficient Landscape Ordinance will also be considered, along with a continuing hearing on housing element obligations and awarding a contract for stormwater services. In addition, Council will consider appointment of George Gastel as interim mayor and appointment of Council members to boards, committees, and commissions. The Lemon Grove City Council meets in the Lemon Grove Community Center at 6 p.m. on Tuesday, January 5th. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery with our local government report.
California Attorney General Kamala Harris started the new year off by issuing an information bulletin to California law enforcement agencies outlining new responsibilities under state law to report shootings or any use of force that results in serious bodily injury or death of a civilian or a peace officer. The new reporting is required by Assembly Bill 71, which Harris supported. An annual report of data must be submitted to the California Department of Justice beginning January 1, 2017. Harris issued this statement, "As a career prosecutor, I have always known one central truth. The public and law enforcement need each other to keep our communities safe. I am proud to implement landmark legislation requiring reporting from law enforcement agencies to the California Department of Justice on shooting and use of force incidents." She adds, "California is leading the nation in promoting accountability through open data, which will strengthen trust between law enforcement and the communities that we are sworn to protect. The Department of Justice will be working with law enforcement agencies to develop and field test a web-based collection system that will ultimately allow law enforcement agencies to submit use of force data electronically and track data internally. In 2017, use of force data collected by the Department of Justice under the new law will also be published on the Attorney General's Open Justice Dashboard and Data Portal. Open Justice is a first-of-its-kind criminal justice open data initiative that releases unprecedented information. Already the site has information released recently on deaths in custody, arrest rates, and law enforcement officers killed or assaulted. The goal is to build both trust and accountability through transparency." Since January 2015, Attorney General Harris has taken several other steps to strengthen the trust between law enforcement and California communities. These actions include a body camera pilot project for Department of Justice agents, and a review of training programs for department agents on use of force aiming to eliminate bias. Her office is also training police executives from 29 law enforcement agencies in a principled policing course. In addition, Harris has brought police, youth, and community groups together for discussions and started a 21st Century Policing Working Group seeking ways to build community trust and eliminate bias and share best practices. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Bill Driscoll.
This is Tasha Matthews with a Crime Beat report about a kidnapper whose plans were foiled after multiple victims fought back. Ira Stringer, the 45-year-old man accused of kidnapping a baseball coach and a teen player in San Diego, then later carjacking a second vehicle with a Ramona grandmother inside, has been arrested. Stringer was taken into custody in Riverside on Sunday after a 45-mile police chase and a two-hour SWAT standoff, if Ramona Sentinel reports. The bizarre chain of events began on Wednesday morning, December 23rd, when Stringer reportedly kidnapped a baseball coach and a player at gunpoint from Hickman Fields in Kearny Mesa. He asked for a cigarette, but the coach refused. Stringer then ordered the coach to drive to Ramona, claiming he had to escape from a gang. During the long ride, Stringer sat in the back seat, keeping his gun pointed at both victims. The coach, Dylan Graham, gave the kidnapper money, but Stringer would not release his hostages. Fearing for the lives of his teenage baseball player and himself, the coach waited for the right moment to take action. When Stringer lit a cigarette and started smoking, the coach undid his seatbelt and lunged between the seats, trying to grab the gun from the suspect in the back seat, NBC Channel 7 News reported. During the struggle, Graham lost control of his Jeep, which struck another vehicle, then plunged into a ditch off San Vicente Road in Ramona. The gun went off, striking the roof of the Jeep, but the coach managed to grab the gun. The team baseball player, 16-year-old Jack Griffin, leaped out and flagged down a passing motorist who gave him a ride to a sheriff's station in Ramona, the Ramona Sentinel reports. The coach told authorities he also tried to ask a motorist for help, but that Stringer approached him, so he fired twice at the suspect's feet. Barbara Roulier, a 79-year-old grandmother from Ramona, came upon the crash scene where the suspect approached her. Roulier told ABC 10 News that the man had blood on him and seemed distraught, so she offered him a ride to a hospital or a police station, even though she sensed he was high. So she prayed for help. Then Stringer pointed his hand at her through his pocket of his jeans, claiming to have a gun. Roulier said he ordered her to get him off the mountain, avoid roadblocks, and try not to escape. She took Highway 67, chatting with the suspect to try and establish rapport. But when she stopped at a red light near the Goodwill store in Ramona, the spry grandmother shifted the car into park, then jumped out, tucking and rolling to avoid injury. Later, she told 10 News that her adrenaline was kicking in. She said she's glad she was the one the suspect chose to kidnap, adding that people, especially older people, must not fall victim to terror. After she escaped, Stringer took off in her car, a silver Mercedes. A woman in a car behind Roulier saw Roulier escape and gave her a ride to the sheriff's station. Stringer paid another motorist to drive him out of the area. They stopped at a convenience store to make a purchase. Later, authorities found her car at the Verona Casino parking lot in Lakeside. They tracked down the driver who gave Stringer a ride. Soon after, the sheriff put out a bulletin to media with images of Stringer from surveillance video at the convenience store. It is unclear where Stringer went on Thursday or Friday, Christmas Eve or Christmas Day. On Saturday, authorities believe he robbed an AM/PM store in Lemon Grove, then used a shotgun to rob a Circle K store shortly after midnight on Sunday. That's when, again, he drew the attention of police, who chased him through Orange County and into Riverside County. There, they used a spike strip to finally stop the car, though it took hours to convince him to surrender. He faces charges of robbery, assault with a deadly weapon, and evading police in Orange County. San Diego police have said they will seek extradition to have Stringer face additional charges locally, Fox 5 News reports. He reportedly admitted to the kidnappings here, as well as the Lemon Grove robbery during the interrogations. He has a long criminal record dating back to 1990, including kidnapping a Spring Valley woman in 1995. Graham, the coach who risked his life to save his teenage player, was treated for minor injuries at a hospital and is expected to fully recover. The young player's father told NBC 7 News that if it were not for the coach's brave actions, we could have been at a funeral mass instead of a Christmas mass.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, networking for social justice.
There and is a federal recreation area itself. And there's also a big solar project moving forward in Hakumba that's facing a lot of opposition, and that's one to watch for next year.
Yeah, I always find it interesting to find environmentalists fighting against renewable energy, but everything needs to be done properly for these giant projects especially.
Mm-hmm.
So there's also some interesting things going on in the education system that we can talk about.
There are. One of the hottest issues this year was the Grossmont war on charter schools. The Grossmont Union High School District filed a lawsuit trying to shut down several charter schools that it claims are violating the law by operating in its boundaries without permission from the district. And that drew over 200 students and teachers and parents coming out to protest recently. It's interesting because the charters they want to shut down say they're serving the needs of students that the district is not meeting the needs of, including refugees and minorities, pregnant students, dropouts, you know, kids who were too old to get a diploma and had aged out of the high school system. An attorney for one of those schools, Diego Valley Charter, is actually fired back, and its attorney has served the district with notice, claiming it's violating the California Voting Rights Act, which is a law intended to protect the interests of minorities. So it's going to be very interesting to see how that gets resolved.
So I know also in the Grossmont district, they've been addressing the issue with Alpine wanting to build a high school.
Yes, that is sort of the mother of all education issues out here in East County. A little background on this. There was a grand jury recommendation to build the Alpine High School that was promised in two different bond measures that people voted for in the past. And yet the Grossmont Union High School District refused to do it. The County Board of Education this year sided with parents, actually last year, recommending that Alpine families be allowed to just leave the district and take their bond money and have the Alpine Union School District unify or expand to not be just elementary and middle school, but expand all the way through high school and build the school for them. Now, the Grossmont refused to turn the money over for that. And so the Alpine taxpayers and the Alpine Union School District sued Grossmont this year. The case, I won't even go into all of them, it's had more twists and turns than a roller coaster ride. But the latest was a hearing in December 17th where the judge ruled that the case needs to go forward to trial. So there's a meeting of everybody in January to set a trial date for that.
Yeah, so that'll be ongoing.
Yeah, meanwhile, one more point on that, and that is that the district, despite all of this, they've actually spent more of taxpayer money hiring a consultant to study the feasibility of whether they can convince voters to support yet another bond measure. You know, one of their own former bond oversight committee members is calling this totally fiscally irresponsible. So,
yeah, that's going to be a contentious issue moving forward in 2016.
Exactly.
And then there was something else about a company accused of dumping toxic waste near a school.
Yes, Magnolia Elementary School has actually been shut down for a whole year by the Cajon Valley District, and that's after parents filed a lawsuit against a company that's accused of dumping toxic waste. According to the suit, 7,000 gallons of TCE, or trichloroethylene, which is a solvent waste, was dumped by Amatec, and that created an underground plume over a mile long. It extends all the way to Gillespie Field, and it's the largest such plume of that particular pollutant in the entire state of California.
Wow.
So that big cleanup job waiting there.
Yeah, so those are some major stories in education, but we've also had some stories going on with land use controversies as well.
Yeah, I'll say one of the biggest was the Covert Canyon issue. At year's end, the Planning Commission shot down efforts to appeal that decision. What that was all about was a firearms training facility for military and law enforcement. The planning director decided that conducting this training 12 hours a day, 5 days a week, doesn't have any major impact on the environment or on communities, and therefore it just doesn't need a major use permit at all. They rely on, you know, the fact that shooting is allowed by right on rural properties, but typically we're talking hunting or a little bit of target shooting, not, you know, continual training with high caliber weapons for the military out there.
Yeah.
Now, Cleveland National Forest Foundation has said that this will mean the death of a national forest because this property in Alpine is surrounded on all sides by the federal forest. The owner, however, Mark Halcon, says such training is needed with terrorism on the rise and so forth. And he's insisting that wildlife can just coexist with these large caliber weapons firing. So at year's end, the opponents are asking supervisors to intervene. What's particularly troubling, I think, for many rural residents is that this isn't just a decision about this property. What the director actually did is he reclassified this military training with high caliber weapons to say it fits under the law enforcement definition. And if you read that in the county zoning ordinance, the law enforcement definition is talking about like police stations, storage, parking police vehicles. It is not talking about paramilitary operations, which would require a major use permit. So somehow he's saying this is not paramilitary, that it's law enforcement and it's okay. But opponents are saying, and environmentalists, that this could open the door to allowing the same kind of thing on many, many, many properties across the rural parts of East County. So as of year's end, environmental groups and neighbors are asking the supervisors to hear an appeal. And if that doesn't happen, they're saying they're going to sue.
Yeah. So Mr. Halcon's going to have some treacherous ground to walk here, I guess, legally speaking.
Yeah, well, we'll have to see. They're talking about suing the county, actually, and Mr. Halcon has indemnified the county, which is quite interesting. So we'll just have to wait and see what a judge says on that one, unless the supervisors intervene.
Now, there's also something going on in Lakeside about a sand mine.
Yeah, there's a project out there that kind of has the Orwellian doublespeak name of El Monte Nature Preserve, but what it really is a proposed sand mining operation that, if approved, it would dredge the valley floor down 30 feet deep and dump 250 trucks a day hauling sand out of this designated scenic valley for the next 30 years, with a promise that they would restore habitat about 30 years from now. Supporters say the sand is needed for highway construction, but the residents are afraid that their quality of life is at stake and it should matter more than profits for this developer. So it was a very heated hearing of the Lakeside Community Planning Group. They've raised concerns over dust and air quality and deadly valley fever spores that have been found out there and sickened some folks, as well as noise and potentially pollution of their well water. So ultimately, this will probably wind up being decided by the supervisors as well. It's, you know, almost a done deal that whatever decision the Planning Commission makes will be appealed on that one.
Also, there's been some news about some developments that have been planned in Jamul and La Mesa.
Absolutely. Now, let's do La Mesa first. There were some hot hotel plans there. Park Station was a high rise. It was very controversial because it would have been at one point 18 stories high. I think they scaled it down to 9, but that's still way over the 4-story city limit. And during the year, they've surprised everybody and just withdrew the whole thing. Their co-applicant, the American Legion, pulled out after all the community opposition. And the applicant actually withdrew the application. The planning board denied this. And rather than take the appeal up to the council, they just withdrew it. Now, whether it's because they thought it wouldn't be approved or because, meanwhile, out in El Cajon, the El Cajon Council approved not one but 2 4-star hotels to be built in El Cajon. I don't know. Maybe they thought that was too much competition. Maybe they were just afraid it was going to be turned down. But anyway, out in El Cajon, we're going to have those hotels slated to open next year.
Hmm. And what about Jamul?
Well, that's been very controversial also. The Jamul Indian tribe out at the Jamul Indian Village are building a Hollywood-themed casino. To the Indians, this is very important to provide economic prosperity to a tribe where many of the members have long lived below the federal poverty level. And we actually interviewed Tribal Chair Erica Pinto all about this. They're very excited about it. But there's a very vocal and substantial group of neighbors who are very upset about it. They got a couple hundred people out to protest it. They say they've had a petition signed by, they claim, thousands of people. They're mostly worried about traffic along Highway 94. That's their major evacuation route from fires. So there's still litigation working its way through the courts. So far, none of it's been successful for the opponents. But meanwhile, the casino is nearing completion and it's slated to open next year.
So that brings us on to some more news here. There was big news about the airport there in Santee, Gillespie Field, when a pilot crashed.
That's right. Even before the crash, the neighbors had been very upset. They'd been trying to get supervisors to put some restrictions in place on the flight schools out there, which have been expanding their operations and bringing in more and more primarily foreign students training there. It's changed the flight patterns, and the residents have been busy documenting complaints of blights that were too low over homes and that they felt was putting their neighborhood at risk of just this kind of thing. There has been a crash there in the past, and then lo and behold, a plane crashed into a Santee home in September, killing the pilot and a student from one of those blight schools. And, you know, it was just by the grace of God, basically, that nobody was in the house who was injured or killed when that happened. So the residents are organizing. They're trying to get enough people together to file a lawsuit against the county because so far the county, in their view, has not been responsive to their concerns about safety.
Yeah, that's interesting. A tragic accident there. People lost their lives. It's a risky endeavor to fly a plane, I'm sure.
Absolutely.
And so some other stories here. There was some good news for the wildlife with this bear sanctuary that opened up.
Well, yeah. You might say they're providing the bear necessities, Ed. This is for rescued bears. Their first bear they took in actually was local wildlife. It was a bear raiding a campground in Southern California that needed to find a permanent home so that it wouldn't have to be euthanized by the rangers. And once they took in Meatball a couple of years ago, all of a sudden, everybody wanted them to help with other bears. And so they've been traveling the country rescuing bears from a private zoo that closed down, from private owners that were either couldn't take care of the animals anymore, or in one case, a state where they changed the law and it became illegal to own these kinds of animals. So the good news is that lions, tigers, and bears right out here in Alpine managed to take in 10 bears, ranging from grizzly and black bears to exotic species such as Himalayan bears. And they've done a big fundraising drive, and they've built a couple of really big enclosures now to take care of these bears and give them a permanent place to live where there's, you know, rocks and trees and ponds, and a lot better than the little teeny tiny, you know, cages or cement enclosures where they were living before.
Yeah, that's good news. Good to hear good stories like that.
Yeah.
There's some other stories that were affecting the general population, such as transportation issues.
Yeah, one of the interesting issues this year was Sandag moving forward on its regional transportation plan, but they were also sued. The Cleveland National Forest Foundation and the Sierra Club challenged that, and the Supreme Court did hand a partial victory to them. Basically, the critics say that the plan's transportation plan is upside down. It's putting the emphasis on freeways first instead of mass transit, which is just the opposite of what the state's climate change mandate requires. So again, that's kind of still in the courts, and Sandag approved it pretty much despite some of the legal concerns, so we're going to have to see what happens.
Yeah, it'd be nice to have a little more trolley service in East County. But that's the nature of these issues.
Yeah, there you go.
That's why we're here to cover it. Mm-hmm. There was also some contention over an air tanker.
Yeah, what happened was the Forest Service, out of the blue, refused to land its new jumbo air tankers at the Ramona Air Base, and they were claiming the airstrip was too small to land these big planes. So the macho guys over at Cal Fire promptly put a video out and then showed it was possible to land the exact same plane, and in fact, they had already done so. So the county supervisors put forth a plea along with the entire congressional delegation and our local Cal Fire chief and just about everybody else, but so far, for reasons unknown, the Forest Service has not lifted that ban. And so I think that's something we should all be very concerned about, because it really does put East County residents at risk if those tankers have to come from outside of San Diego County to fight a major wildfire that's here.
Yeah, and we can see with that recent fire in Santa Barbara area that despite El Nino, we're still at fire risk in this state.
Yeah, it could still happen. Absolutely.
So there's been some major health stories in the news this year as well.
There have. Topping the headlines on that, of course, would be the whole controversy over vaccinations, which started with the measles outbreak that began at Disneyland. And that actually sickened a number of people right here in East County. People were exposed everywhere from urgent care centers to Parkway Plaza on that one. It resulted in the state legislature passing a law mandating vaccinations for public school children statewide and allowing exemptions only for medical reasons. You can't opt out anymore just for parental choice or even religious reasons.
That's kind of a controversial issue with people that claim that there's autism links, but the mainstream science has said that there are no links to autism for vaccination.
Yeah, exactly. So, but it's definitely, there was a lot of opposition to that. The other big issue has been the buzz over mosquitoes around here. You know, first there were some fatal cases of West Nile virus right here in East County. And if that wasn't enough to make you reach for the bug spray and insect repellent, now there's something called the Aedes aegypti mosquito. It's been found in several locations countywide this year, and it can carry yellow fever as well as dengue fever. But a new alarm that was sounded at year's end is they can also carry something called the Zika virus. Down in Brazil, the health officials are warning that the bite of this mosquito can be linked to serious birth defects in children, something called microcephaly, where their brains are born too small. In Brazil, they're actually warning women in certain areas that have a lot of these mosquito bites not to get pregnant right now until they figure out how to control the mosquito. And I want to emphasize, we have not seen the actual diseases borne by these mosquitoes up here yet, but it's certainly possible that that could happen. This is a mosquito, by the way, that breeds indoors. So if you see mosquitoes flying around in your house, please call the county health department.
Yeah, that's a little bit frightening about the Brazilian story. Hopefully that doesn't come into other areas and affect women's pregnancies negatively. Make sure you keep those screens sealed up.
There you go. Yeah, exactly. Wear long sleeves.
And get rid of the standing water, right? Mm-hmm.
That's the best thing you can do.
Speaking of water, Lake Jennings got a reprieve this year.
It did. This is one of our best stories of the year. Nice to have some good news for a change. Now, last year, the Helix Water District was on the verge of shutting down the Lake Jennings campground or even the entire lake to be accessible by the public for recreational activities because it was operating in the red. And thankfully, Director Joel Scalzitti, the new guy on the board, said, wait a minute, let's see if we can't save this. And he talked the board into letting him head up a committee. The good news is that under his leadership, the deficit has been sharply reduced. It's almost at a break-even point right now. In fact, it is at a break-even for everything but the campgrounds, and they're almost there. So the board this year voted not to shut down anything for now, but they will be reconsidering it again next June, and hopefully by then it'll be in the black and there won't be any more talk about losing this beautiful resource for East County.
Yeah, a lot of my friends who fish are happy about that.
Yeah, and they're adding canoeing, by the way. That's the latest thing. So if you want a canoe, you can now bring your canoe and dip it in the water out there.
Yeah, just make sure you wash it off and before and after, right?
There you go.
There were some regulations put on the wine industry, and I know the local wine industry was really booming.
Well, what happened was, a couple of years ago, they put through the tiered winery ordinance, and the idea was to make it easier, actually, for small, local mom-and-pop kind of winemakers to get started and move up through the different tiers, small winery, and then ultimately major use, so that it would help them, basically, to grow this burgeoning industry. Now, this year, the county decided that needs some revisiting. There had been some complaints about some supposed violations. A lot of them, it turns out, were complaints that were made by competitors just trying to put other wineries out of business, complaining about minor zoning infractions in most cases. So there was a very heated hearing on this, and some people in the industry were saying it's too strict, that the new proposals would make it really hard for little wineries to even serve up food or have someone playing the guitar and singing when they do their wine tasting. And others said the restrictions don't go far enough and that they need more. So it's going to be interesting next year once the planning decisions are made on that to see if these changes spur new growth or perhaps cause some of the local wineries and vineyards to just die on the vine.
Ooh. Some other sort of bad news, too. There was some illegal dumping going on out in the East County.
Well, there was, but the good news is that this is one where we can totally claim credit, Ed. It was our investigation that kind of kick-started the county to clean it up. What happened was we got some complaints from environmentalists who'd been complaining to the county for a long time about illegal dumping of 20,000 cubic yards of dirt in Cleveland National Forest right at the headwaters of Boulder Creek, which feeds some of our region's most scenic waterfalls. Gorgeous area. Mm-hmm. Nothing was being done. But as soon as we got a video and photos documenting this mess, we contacted Supervisor Diane Jacob. Within 24 hours, those piles were covered up, and just a few days later, a major cleanup was underway. Cindy Buxton, who's the environmentalist that sent us the video, thanked us, and she said to us, "You must be magical to make this happen so fast."
Magical journalism.
Well, it's nice once in a while to have something positive happen.
Yeah, especially when local journalism can make an impact on, especially on something like the environment or, people's lives. That's very good.
Absolutely.
It's sort of the rewards that we get. Okay. And then something that always Americans are very keen on, which is free speech.
Yes, it was under attack this year, right here in San Diego. Back in June, we reported on a proposal by the county supervisors that would have restricted free speech outside the county administration building. This is where the supervisors meet and where many East County groups have gone to stage their protests, whether it was over, you know, immigration for it, against it, or whether it was people protesting the big energy projects.
Mm-hmm.
That right was under threat. They wanted to cordon them off into free speech zones far away from where the supervisors would actually have to see them walking into the building under certain circumstances. Now, after we ran our story, the American Civil Liberties Union, or ACLU, sent the county a letter and informed them that they thought the proposal was unconstitutional. There were also citizens, including East County folks, that came out to testify against this. And in the end, the supervisors tabled this plan, which amounted to a victory for First Amendment and free speech advocates.
Yeah, I mean, they should know that the entire country is a free speech zone.
Well, yes. Right.
So for our final story here, it's a good thing. It's about medical research into one of the most devastating conditions.
Yes. Supervisors approved something called the Alzheimer's Project, and this certainly affects people throughout the county. A lot of people don't know that Alzheimer's is epidemic in San Diego. We have 60,000 Alzheimer's patients. It's a lot of old people here. Supervisor Diane Jacob gets the credit for this one. She spearheaded the efforts to push through the Alzheimer's Project, and what it does is it makes San Diego a center of medical research efforts to actually find a cure for Alzheimer's. And in addition, there are efforts to improve the lives, meanwhile, of the patients who have it, as well as the caregivers throughout our region. There was a big conference centered around this and, you know, major dollars flowing into medical research as a result of this. So we interviewed Supervisor Jacob on this right here on our radio show when she was trying to push it through. And now that it's been enacted, the National Association of Counties actually gave San Diego an achievement award in recognition for its efforts to battle Alzheimer's.
All right. Well, that's great news. And that about wraps it up for this year's big stories here in East County. And we want to thank all our listeners and readers and also the people who keep us informed of the things going on so we can bring the attention to the general public about these issues and they can be made aware.
Absolutely. We should. Yeah, we should absolutely say that if any of you have story ideas out there that you think we should be covering, you can contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. You know, we're nonprofit, so we can't take on all of them, but we do as many as we possibly can, and we are making a difference. We've won 88 major journalism awards, several of them this year, for reporting that makes a positive difference in the community.
And we also need to take a second to thank all our journalists that help us out writing these stories and covering these issues.
Our journalists, our staff, our volunteers, and our interns, I should say, as well as our donors and our many wonderful listeners and readers who send us their ideas.
Yes, and our guests who come in and give us interviews.
There you go. Helps get the word out. And I love it when I hear from supervisors that, you know, they heard about this, turned on their radio outside. We can be heard down there in front of the supervisor's offices. And I think it's great when the elected officials tell me that they've listened to something on the show or they've seen something on our site and took action because of it.
All right. Well, we wish everyone a happy new year. And thank you again from East County Magazine here on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso.
The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
New laws are taking effect in 2016 that will impact drivers in California. Here are the details provided by the Department of Motor Vehicles. It will be illegal to wear earbuds or headphones in both ears while you're driving a vehicle or bicycle starting January 1st, except for emergency vehicles and heavy equipment.
If you have outstanding traffic tickets and you missed a court appearance, you may be eligible for amnesty. You can apply if you haven't made any payments since September 30th to a collection program for fines or bail that was already due. And also, payment of fines, bail, or other penalties is no longer required for a judge to remove a civil assessment of $300 against any defendant who fails to appear in court. Pedicab drivers will now need to meet new safety requirements and financial responsibilities for pedicabs, but also the new law allows pedicab passengers to consume alcohol on board under certain circumstances. If you buy a used car from a used car dealer that provides financing, the dealer has to inform you if the vehicle has tracking and starter interrupt technology installed, which can enable the dealer or lender to find and disable the vehicle if you miss a payment. The new law also requires that vehicle owners be notified before such technology can be used to disable or repossess your car. You must be 16 years or older to operate a motorized skateboard starting next year, and it's a crime to operate one while under the influence of drugs or alcohol. You also have to wear a bicycle helmet, wear safety gear to be visible after dark, and operate only on roads with a speed limit of 35 miles an hour or less. Electric bicycle riders will be able to use roads similar to other bicycle riders, though local governments can add additional regulations if safety concerns arise on specific paths or public trails. Transportation network companies such as Uber that connect passengers to drivers using personal vehicles are going to have to provide a report on the driver's public record and immediately notify the DMV of any moving violations, accidents, or license suspensions. When you apply for a driver's license or a California ID card, or you submit a change of address to the DMV, you will automatically be registered to vote. This law will take effect after the Secretary of State adopts certain regulations to implement the new law and the legislature appropriates the funds. And last but not least, starting on July 1st next year, applicants for a new driver's license or state ID will have to provide proof of California residency to comply with a new federal requirement. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
The state is considering releasing a sexually violent predator, Ural Davis, in Hakumba Hot Springs. A hearing on his proposed placement in a residence on Old Highway 80 will be held January 22nd at 9 a.m. in San Diego Superior Court, Department 28. Testimony from the public will be accepted at the hearing. In 1993, Davis was sentenced to serve 27 years in prison for sexually assaulting women in three separate cases between 1984 and 1992, but the state found him suited for early release. Several predators released in East County in recent years have violated terms of parole, and one assaulted an elderly woman in Hakumba Hot Springs. Supervisor Diane Jacob has denounced the proposal to release Davis there. She stated, "This serial predator is a sick man who belongs behind bars for his multiple felonies, including rape and kidnapping for sexual purposes." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Bill Driscoll.
This is DeVario Bell with a report on a holiday tragedy. Vanessa De La Cruz, a preschool teacher, died inside a burning home in Bonita on December 28th. Four other family members were taken to UCSD Medical Center for treatment of smoke inhalation. The medical examiner reports that the young woman's father awoke to find the house on fire. He ran through the house, awakening other family members. Gathering outside, the family realized Vanessa was not there, so her father and her brother brought up a ladder to her window but were unable to save her as flames engulfed the home. She was pregnant at the time of her death. The cause of the fire has not yet been determined. The home was owned by former Assemblywoman Shirley Horton, who formerly represented several East County communities in the State Assembly and also served as Chula Vista's mayor. Horton was overwhelmed with grief upon arriving at the scene, Channel 7 News reported. The victim taught at Kids Depot Preschool, where a counselor will be brought in to assist her young students and staff to cope with the loss. A spokesperson for the school remembered De La Cruz as a teacher who brought joy and love to all of the staff and children.
What could be better than the Rose Parade? How about a parade of storms? The National Weather Service website in San Diego stated on New Year's morning. Starting Sunday night, the first in a series of storms swept into the region, bringing light rains across Southern California. But the heaviest rainfall is forecast for San Diego County throughout the week. Snow is forecast for 4,500 feet elevation and higher. If you're driving, watch for blowing snow and dust in the mountain and desert areas.
On the coastlines, very large and potentially damaging surf will build Wednesday and continue through at least Friday. Beach erosion, minor coastal flooding during high tide, strong rip currents, and damage to coastal structures are all possible. So folks, be careful out there and enjoy the winter wonderland and some relief from the drought.
County supervisors agreed to seek rapid deployment of state inmate work crews if El Nino packs a punch in the coming months. The board voted to approve Supervisor Diane Jacobs' proposal to team up with CAL FIRE and ensure that the region's nearly 500 work crew inmates are quickly available to assist with flood prevention and cleanup. Jacobs said, quote, "It's critical that we do all we can to protect people and property if El Nino hits hard this winter. These crews mean more boots on the ground during this potentially stormy season." The state houses the inmates at work camps in Boulevard, Rainbow, and Warner Springs, as well as at La Cima Conservation Camp in Cuyamaca Rancho State Park. The crews are often deployed to major wildfires in the region. The board authorized county executives to strike an agreement with local CAL FIRE officials to permit the speedy deployment of the inmates without clearance from Sacramento. The county is also providing free sandbags to property owners and advising them to take steps to prevent soil erosion. Bags and sand are available at fire stations in Alpine, Boulevard, Crest, Dulzura, Julian, Ramona, and Rancho San Diego, but you must bring your own shovel. According to a recent study by National University, more than 50,000 local residents and nearly 5,000 businesses are within 100-year flood zones that could be inundated during extensive rainfall. Since 2003, the county has invested more than $320 million on fire protection and other public safety improvements to better protect communities during a wildfire, flooding, or other disaster. This has been Ed Barrena reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ.
Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. Today, my very special guest is Lisa Wood, who is a Lakeside resident and a long rider. Lisa, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Miriam.
Can you explain for our listeners exactly what a long rider is?
Well, there's an organization called the Long Riders Guild, and their criteria for whether or not you can be in their guild is you have to have ridden 1,000 miles or more without support.
And we're not talking about on a car or bicycle here.
No. The Long Riders Guild is a horseback rider. So the Long Riders Guild is specifically for people that travel by horseback without support.
Now, you have ridden cross-country twice, once from Southern California, Oregon, once from Southern California all the way to Pennsylvania on the East Coast, and I understand you're considering a third one along the old Spanish Trail. What compelled you to get started on this?
Well, a book. I enjoy reading other people's travel books, and I read one that was republished in 1987, so I didn't initially know when I purchased the book that it was about a ride that actually occurred in 1911. But in 1911, a fairly famous Californian named Joseph Smeaton Chase took his horse Chino and rode from his home in the Los Angeles area to the Oregon border, and he published a book about it. It was one of three books about traveling in California that he published. One was his coastal trip, that's the one I happened to purchase. He also wrote one about a trip to Yosemite and one about a trip through the desert in the Palm Springs area.
So then in 1993, you repeated his trip, or at least as much of it as could be replicated given the freeways and sprawl in Los Angeles these days. What did your friends say, when you said, hey, I'm going to go ride to Oregon?
Well, there were a few who were very supportive. For example, we have a local saddle maker named Gary McClintock, he helped me out. I got the exact same kind of saddle Mr. Chase used. He used a McClellan saddle, and I found an elderly gentleman in El Cajon selling a used one that was an authentic authentic antique, and so I used the exact same kind of saddle. It needed a little bit of work, so Gary did some work and on that saddle for me, and he was very supportive. So there were a few people that were supportive, but there were a whole lot of people that thought I had lost my mind. And they had all had their very serious reasons for why I couldn't do this, and having never done it before, I didn't know if I even could. In fact, Gary recommended that I get some advice from a gentleman who'd done quite a bit of rugged riding. And in the advice, he was teaching me how to make fires by rubbing sticks together. I brought matches with me, by the way. But this gentleman, he
did
was...
Did you do that?
I used matches. He was kind of shaking his head, and what he wasn't saying, but what he meant was I was too young, I was too inexperienced, and I was definitely too female to do a ride like this.
Oh, my goodness. How old were you at the time?
I was in my 30s at the time.
That's not exactly.
I didn't think it was that young. I had never been actually camping overnight with my horse. In fact, I didn't own a horse at the time.
Really? But you had been riding though since you were little. I know you told me in the lobby about a little experience of your first experience on horseback at 3 years old. Can you share that with our listeners?
I'll share that, but I'll, as a preface, say that from the time I was three until I took my first long ride, I was what we call a horseless rider, in that I rode a lot. But typically people paid me to ride their horses for them. Often I was the first one to ride the horse.
You broke the horses then.
I rode people's problem horses. I started horses. I exercised horses. So I had the opportunity to ride a lot of different horses and learn a lot of different styles, which was very advantageous. I got my horse, my first horse, for this long ride is why I got him.
Fascinating.
But my first ride, you asked about my first experience. My first ride, no one else in my family rides horses. My dad rode a little bit when he was growing up, but I grew up in suburban Bakersfield.
And your mom was a Girl Scout leader.
And my mom was a Girl Scout leader. And unfortunately, in Valley Fever, they have that same disease we were talking about that is in El Monte Valley. It's a fungal disease that when the earth gets disturbed and the wind blows, people get very sick.
And so your mother caught Valley Fever.
And my mother caught Valley Fever, so she couldn't take the Girl Scouts that my older sister was in a Girl Scout troop. She couldn't take them horseback riding as they had been promised. And the co-leader didn't want to take the kids, but nobody wanted to disappoint the kids, so my dad agreed. So my dad took the Girl Scouts out horseback riding, but my mom was too sick to look after me. So a little three-year-old tyke came along on the horseback ride. So that was my first horseback ride, and my dad had to contend with trying to get the girls out on the ride and deal with the little three-year-old, and had some difficulty keeping all the girls riding, and they ended up heading back toward the stable, and apparently mine was as barn sour as any, and dad chased me all the way, but my horse got back first and scared the living daylights out of my dad, as he tells the story. When he scooped me out of the saddle, instead of being all scared, I said, "Daddy, Daddy, my horsey, go."
Well, and you've been going on horses ever since then, it sounds like. Now, the first ride that you took to Oregon, how long did it take you?
That took 3.5 months. That was on that first horse that I purchased for the trip. Mm-hmm. His name was Cacho. Unfortunately, he had to be put down last year. Mm-hmm. He had liver cancer, but he was 28. He lived a good long life.
Is there a highlight that stands out from that trip for you?
Well, I'll tell you, for both long rides, there are two main points, and the first is that there are just a whole lot of very good and helpful people who would drop everything to help me out along the way. That's the first point. And the second point is we live in a fabulously beautiful place, and the coast of California is just absolutely spectacular. For example, I got to ride an area called the Avenue of the Giants, with the giant redwoods on both sides and elk grazing in the meadow. Just spectacular. 17-mile drive in the Monterey area. I rode that on horseback with the crashing surf and the rocky coastline. Just some spectacularly beautiful places.
What an amazing experience. Now, that was in 1993. Then in 2001, you decided to ride along three historic trails, the Kearney Trail, the Santa Fe Trail, and the Old National Road, all the way basically from Southern California to Santa Fe, New Mexico, and then from Santa Fe to St. Louis, and from there on to the East Coast. How long did that trip take you?
That took 5 months. And if you do the math, you'll see that the horse that I rode to Virginia, it's a different horse, it's my Mustang mare, mm-hmm. she picked up the pace a little bit. She averaged 20 miles a day, whereas Cacho, on the first trip, he averaged 15 miles a day. So the second trip on my more energetic Mustang mare, it took 5 months to cover 3,000 miles. And I'll tell you that 20 miles a day, you know, if you're driving in a car, that doesn't seem like very far. If you're riding on a horse day after day after day for 5 months, 20 miles is a long way. And I was tired at the end of every day. I was ready to crawl in that mm-hmm. tent and get some shut-eye. And my mare was never tired. I would tie her to a tree or a bush or a fence or something like that, and she'd be pacing around. Come on, come on, put the gear back on. Let's go some more.
Wow. Now, I understand that you had a few hair-raising moments on that trip. What happened?
Oh, gosh. Well, probably one of the biggest hazards, even in the days of the wagon train, was weather. And the weather hasn't gotten any easier from the days of the wagon trains until now. And I was within 10 miles of two tornadoes. The second tornado that was very close to where I was in Dodge City, Kansas. And there was a good situation for Shawnee and me because we had mm-hmm. Been introduced to a man who had some big barns and a lot of other horses. And so we had a place to shelter, although if the tornado actually hits, the shelter's not going to help. It only helps in the heavy
Wizard of Oz.
Exactly. There. So I was helping this. Brad Marshall was the man's name. He runs mm-hmm. this Wild West show for the tourists in Dodge City, Kansas.
Wow.
And I was helping him feed his animals in the storm. And he looked up at the sky with the thunder and lightning and the rain coming down. And he, in his slow Kansas drawl, said, "Well, if it turns into a twister, I'll come up to the barn and get you and bring you down to the cellar."
Oh, boy.
I looked at Shawnee and I said, "Well, it's going to be one heck of a night because I was spending the night in the barn with Shawnee unless he came up to get me to take me down into the cellar."
Oh, my goodness. Wow.
As it turned out, that tornado didn't hit Dodge City. It hit a nearby town called Rolla, and there were two fatalities in Rolla.
Oh, my goodness. Now, I understand that you're considering taking yet another long ride, and this one would be along the Old Spanish Trail. Where exactly is that?
Well, the Old Spanish Trail predates the Santa Fe Trail, but it's the same kind of idea. When Spain was in charge of New Mexico and Santa Fe and the little settlements throughout there, they forbade trade with California. And so it wasn't until 1822 that trade routes could happen, and it took a little while before there was a wagon route. So before the wagon route, there was a mule route. So the mule route from Santa Fe to California in 1822 developed very quickly, and it went from Santa Fe to California to the trading centers in California, which would have been the Los Angeles area and Monterey.
Hmm. Well, that sounds like a fascinating trip as well, and we'll look forward to hearing all about that. Now, you have written two books about your first two trips. Tell us the names of those and a little bit about what people can read in them.
So the first trip on Cacho is called Chasing the California Dream, and it moves along very quickly. The first draft of it, I had a whole lot of California history and California natural history. And in the version I published, I cut it down to just mostly my stories about the adventures that Cacho and I had going to Oregon. And the second one is called Mustang Journal because the mare I rode to Virginia was born on Bureau of Land Management land. She's a wild Mustang.
Oh, wow.
And in that, I did include a little bit of the history from the historical trails that I was retracing. So there's a little bit of history in that one as well as my personal adventures.
Fascinating. Where can people find the books Chasing the California Dream and Mustang Journal?
Those are available on Amazon.com. The new copies of Mustang Journal are sold out, but there are still used copies available, and there are still new copies of Chasing the California Dream available. And yeah, maybe one day I'll do a ebook version.
Well, very good. And we certainly look forward to having you back when you chase your next dream on the Old Spanish Trail. Thank you so much, Lisa, for joining us on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ.
Thank you, Mary.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the East County Wellness Center for our studio space,
to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technicians, Leon Thompson and Ed Barena, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.